karma, like the definition of karma, is that it's the wake of all your actions, right? The wake of all your actions. Like if you're a boat going through the lake, everything you touch kind of peels behind you and then makes little waves and stuff like that. So in the same sense, as you're experiencing your, you know, your barking dog, your snake bite, your sore knee, the gunshots, the house blowing up, the amazing pool party, you know, partying on Sailor's yacht, whatever it is, these things are also felt by other people. They're just different.
You're listening to the Wake Up Podcast with Alex Fetsky, the place where the most dynamic thinkers and practitioners in the world drop truth bombs and contrarian viewpoints to help you become the best version of yourself. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. CJ Wilson joins me on today's episode of Wake Up. Some of you might know him as a Major League Baseball player. I know him as a pretty deep-thinking Bitcoiner who has some ideas that are very much worth exploring. In this episode, we dig into one in particular, which is his theory of karmic gravity. Super interesting. We talk about spiritual metabolism, chivalry, virtues, and a Bushido for Bitcoiners. You can follow CJ on Twitter at Straight Edge Racer, that's with the number 8. It's like his Hotmail email from when he was 17 or something. And I will see you next week for part 2 of this miniseries. Thanks again for listening. Remember to subscribe and enjoy the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Wake Up Podcast, soon to be changing its name. Today's episode, I've got CJ Wilson with me, who I actually first connected with. And let's see if you remember this, CJ. It was a Clubhouse discussion with Alan Farrington. It was we were going to call it widening the rabbit hole, which sounded really fucking sexually wrong. So it's good to chat again, man. It's been I guess 2 and a bit years since then.
Yeah. When we first met digitally on Clubhouse, that was Clubhouse's like,
you know, heyday,
roaring 20s. That was the great Gatsby yes. of social media. Because I think so many people had their guards down and were willing to share what they actually felt and what they actually mm-hmm. thought. And then they were willing to listen, which is extremely hard to do most of the time. My wife was pregnant, so I had a ton of time because she was staying closer to the hospital mm-hmm. that we wanted to have the baby at for health reasons. And I was kind of commuting about 4 or 5 hours driving time per week, like twice a week. So I had tons of time on Clubhouse, and that's where I met like you, Jimmy Song, Alan, I think like Leah from Valkyrie. I met a lot of like, you know, Bitcoin people. And then those people sort of like opened other doors for me eventually. Mm-hmm. American Hoddle, of course, everybody's favorite pseudonym. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no. And then we met in person, I think, was it Bitcoin Day Kansas City or was it at the conference?
Maybe, in I can't remember if it was the first Miami conference or if it was, my guess is it was Kansas, unless like maybe we met in passing at the first Miami conference.
Yeah.
But who knows? Yeah. I mean, we definitely hung out at Kansas. That was the actual catch up that I remember.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, my thing, just a little bit of background on me. I played baseball for over a decade in the majors. That allowed me to retire, I guess, into a kind of a cushy job as a manager at a car dealership. And so I bought a couple car dealerships when I retired, which is like a really traditional American fiat business to be involved mm-hmm. in. Brick and mortar, employees in person, you know, compliance, KYC, AML, all that stuff. That's kind of the daily grind for us, fixing shit, stuff breaks, angry customers, seeing that. So Bitcoin for me is kind of like my mental vacation because it's mm-hmm. an inner space thing. And it sort of has gotten me into this, I guess it's really unlocked a lot of these other conversations that I've been having with other people for the last couple decades. I'm 41. So the stuff that I was coming up with, you know, like late night when I was a teenager thinking, you know, listening to Master of Puppets or something like that, or Ride the Lightning. Now I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, now some of this stuff is coming to pass and I need to kind of get that out here. So I guess today we could have like a sort of non-Bitcoin conversation, which most of my podcast stuff is either baseball or Bitcoin. But yeah, I think I was telling you before, like in the pre-show thing, about how I think like we just have an issue with truth. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big issue. And then and that's because we have a lot of people that have feelings, and feelings are very fiat. And so they have a tendency to be too polite. And one of the things that I love about you, and I said this to you before, was you are totally unapologetically going to speak your mind, right? You're going to stand your ground. You're going to say, this is me. This is what I say. This is what I do. This is who I am. And there's very few people out there doing that, which is why the world's a really jacked up place right now. Because, you know, people are losing their grip on truth. They're losing their grip on reality, and they don't understand how connected we all are as people. Because they're so focused on their feelings, which are intangible and transitory, and there's really no depth to, there's no like bottom to that pool. You know, if you start diving in and analyzing yourself psychologically, you get into these like, why do I feel this way? I feel this way because this person, and you give all this power away, you know. But truth is really the thing that we need to cling to and look at as a North Star. And I think that's where my personal philosophy and my understanding of maybe like, you know, physics and stuff helps me out a lot as like, I would consider myself like a stoic or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of my intro ramble, I guess.
Yeah. It's, speaking of Kansas, when we caught up there, I remember like, I guess you would probably get this a lot being a NX sports star and then kind of moving into brick and mortar business, like people would kind of mentally put you in a box, and to a degree, I mean, I mentally put you in a box. I was like, cool, Bitcoiner based, understands this stuff. But when we sat down and actually had that conversation, you started talking about like your theory around karmic gravity and all this sort of stuff. I was like, fuck, this guy's a deep dude. And I remember saying back then, I was like, we definitely need to have a conversation. We need to record something. And I also proposed that, you know, you should do some writing for the Bitcoin Times project. And, you know, that project specifically is very dear to my heart. Like I really want to select people that I highly respect, to add to or produce content there. And yeah, man, the some of the words you said and what we discussed over at Kansas really intrigued me, and we've crossed paths a couple of times since then. And I think for me, that's of interest. What I try and do with this podcast is bring ideas that are, you know, not the norm. And part of what I mentioned to you also pre-show, which people listening to the show have kind of heard me talk about, is that I want to change the name. And I think the name that is kind of like the work in progress at the moment, or the working title, is contrapliant, which is this idea of actively non-compliant or against the grain. Mm. And that really fits into what I value a lot, which is where is the truth, and what is, I guess, like what's anti-entropic in nature. It's like we've got this kind of like herd mentality, and we're, you know, we're living in this empire of lies, and everyone's trying to pretend their way into prosperity. And it seems like truth is the thing that is contrapliant in relation to, you know, the shitstorm direction that we're headed in. So yeah, man, I'd love to dig into that. We'll dig into all sorts of things as we kind of branch off. But, you know, do you want to maybe start with karmic gravity, the genesis of the name, and we can
dig in? So a lot of people think of, you know, the people around them as important, unimportant, you know, tight, close, you know, you admire these people, whatever. But really what it is there's a sort of base level of attraction or energy that you share with other people based on likeness, combinations of, let's say, shared experiences or natural just sort of paths that you're going to cross. You live next to somebody, you see what kind of car they drive, you see if they're nice to their kids, you know, you hear if they have a barking dog or a cat, you kind of are aware, you know, you have a base level of awareness for somebody next to you. You might not care about them, you might not like them, but what they do does affect you in a way that they sort of radiate, you know, in every direction. Everybody does. Okay. So this is the base level of understanding of karmic gravity as a concept. Everything that we experience is like observable to somebody else. Maybe not necessarily from directly our perspective, but that's sort of the point. So if you imagine that, I'll use this cute little like demonstrator copper Bitcoin key thing right here. So if you imagine that this is you, right, and this is me, and we live next door to each other, if stuff's going on in your life, I can sort of observe that, and I'm close enough based on like our distance that there's going to be a little bit of blend in between your experiences and what I think about your experiences. Okay, so there's this kind of thing that we've brought into the culture over the years of like the storyteller, right? The storyteller ends up like there's this psychological experiment. There's a lady named Anna Kulin that basically explains selective hearing and how selective hearing actually gets people to be on the same wavelength. So as you're saying something and someone's paying attention to it, they're thinking the same things that caused you to say what you said. And so they can kind of empathize. And this is sort of a human condition that we've evolved. So if I say, my knee really hurts, I got bit by a snake, you know, I heard a gunshot. Like there's these things that you can kind of relate to because you've either experienced them yourself or you can imagine them. And then so you sort of imagine what it would feel like to be in that position. And that's sort of a very base level of understanding of like how an event sort of radiates in every direction in like a moment. And if your house blows up and you live next to me, I'm going to experience your house blowing up, right? Like literally, I will feel the heat, the pressure, I'll see stuff, I might get debris, or I might be in danger as well. So in that regard, you have to think of yourself as the center of your own life, okay? And like peeling this back a little bit. So a lot of people think of themselves living on Earth, and you know, Earth is tumbling through space and through the solar system, and the solar system is actually moving through the galaxy is moving through the universe. Some people understand like exactly how much motion is involved, but most people just sort of stand still and they don't feel the Earth turning, they don't feel any of this stuff. It's because in an infinite universe, right, you are the center of your universe. Everybody has their own unique universe. There's a guy named Everett that came up with the many worlds theory in the 50s. He was a student of like vis-a-vis of like Niels Bohr, and he was a big fan of like Schrodinger's wave equation. So what he explained in using like quantum physics and quantum mechanics and stuff is basically that everything is just in transition from one thing to the next thing, right? That's like you said, entropic. There's an entropy to the universe that it's sort of going from hot to cold, right to left, east to west. There's like some direction that's happening. And in your life, you're born and you have your family unit and whatever. And those are sort of like your closest people. And then eventually you go to school and you make new friends. And depending on how you relate to those other people, they have more gravity or you have more gravity to them, vice versa. So let's take somebody that we both admire, we both like, Parker Lewis, right? Parker Lewis in my like Bitcoin space is like my Bitcoin Jupiter, right? He's somebody that has a lot of importance. I read his stuff. I read his tweets. I interact with him when I go to Texas. What he says is important. I take his words very seriously. I don't think he's flippant about his opinions. I think he's like right on. I think he's got a lot of experience. So I admire him in a way that adds to his my understanding of his sort of karmic gravity in my life. Karma, like the definition of karma, is that it's the wake of all your actions, right? The wake of all your actions. Like if you're a boat going through the lake, everything you touch kind of peels behind you and then makes little waves and stuff like that. So in the same sense, as you're experiencing your, you know, your barking dog, your snake bite, your sore knee, the gunshots, the house blowing up, the amazing pool party, you know, partying on Sailor's yacht, whatever it is, these things are also felt by other people. They're just different, right? And so you have to understand how those relationships work, almost like in a constellation or like a solar system sense, and say that like, if we're aligned, we're experiencing something at the same time, right? It just in the same sense that a Bitcoin transaction is broadcast and then it sort of ripples through the system, you know, we experience events in the same way. If you're standing next to me, we experience it kind of like in a rhythm that we're in the same, we're synced up because we're at the same distance from the event or the event horizon. But then the further you get away, the more distilled or distilled or maybe sour the experiences or sweet the experiences or whatever. Just like if you're eating something a day after it's been cooked, it's not going to taste as good right away. So just understanding how like time works from an experience standpoint and radiates. So all of your experiences eventually get sort of waved out. They sort of just wave out in every direction. And that's how we relate to each other. Except the problem that I always had was trying to understand how to link people, you know, because it seems very selfish to say I'm the center of my universe. So whatever I experience is uniquely mine. And, you know, that's it. It's like, well, what about the other people? But then you think about it, like if we're in one plane, like we're orbiting stuff, then you can build your own solar system of the people you care about. You know, you have your girlfriend that swirls around you. You have your kids, you have your dogs, you have your, like whatever possessions you have. Those things all affect your perception. And it just kind of keeps rippling. But then what you can do is you can stack them in layers to say that like in space, it doesn't matter if it's north or south, east or west. It's just the distance. It's really just the distance that causes the closeness of or the reverence or whatever you want to call it, where people look up to each other or dislike each other. It's just the distances and the frequency are sort of the two factors that determine how much you're going to affect somebody else. It gets way bigger than that, but I'll let you ask a question.
Okay. Cool. So couple threads to pull on there. It reminds me a number of years ago, I was debating, I don't know what I was doing. Maybe I was debating someone. I don't know. I can't remember what the setting was, but it was, they had their whole theory of conspiracies and lizards behind red curtains, strings and all that sort of stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it. There is, you know, all sorts of weird shenanigans happening in the world. You know, there is like, people conspiring for all sorts of things. But the kind of argument that I made was that we're all, you know, in our own bubble. And it's funny, as you were describing karma gravity, I was thinking back to this moment, and this would have been 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even longer actually, where I just, the way I tried to describe this, call it interconnectedness, or maybe, you know, in your words, like this, this wake and gravity and relationship with everyone else was, I said, we're all like these bubbles and we're all conspiring towards something ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're all moving in some direction and we're actually impacting that around us. And then yes, that's actually, you know, someone else is also doing the same thing and our forces either, you know, moving in the same direction or opposing or at some sort of angle. And we're kind of all like this, you know, massive bubbles pushing against each other. And, you know, some conspiracies just happen to be larger than others because, you know, the bubble is larger for those people. Mm-hmm. And I guess to use your terminology, it's like their gravity is greater.
Yes.
And it seems to impact or affect more of the other bubbles. And therefore there seems to be a direction. So that's an interesting parallel. Like that didn't even come up when you first told me about this in Kansas, but it's like a, I don't know, that's just like popped up from the void of my fucking subconscious of
right.
So, conversation that I had.
So using your visual, right? So imagine we're all just like various sized soccer balls and tennis balls and golf balls sort of like bouncing around, sort of fighting for purchase, fighting for some sort of grip on the ground or something like that, right? Stacking each other up. There's people in the world that are, and this isn't to say that they're worth more. It just means that they have a bigger effect. And using the mathematical term of absolute value, which is basically the number with the two, you know, the two vertical posts on the other side of it. If someone has a huge negative effect, right, they impact a lot of people. If someone has a huge positive effect, they impact a lot of people. It doesn't mean that you're a good person or a bad person. It just means that you have a big effect, right? And so if you think about a, like our current world situation, which depending on when this is released, it'll probably still be current. Vladimir Putin has a huge level of karmic gravity, right? Because when he stomps his foot and hits the red button and missiles go off or whatever it is, or shuts the pipeline down, if he shuts the pipeline down, it affects a lot of other people, right? Now there's a proximity to that, right? Because he doesn't necessarily affect people in California like on a direct basis, but eventually that wave gets there, right? So think of it like we're all in the pool. Okay. We're all in a very, like a wading pool that's like three, four good feet analogy. Deep. Yeah. We can all stand in. Now, if you imagine the Earth as a sort of, as the map that we grew up with, looking at it in a two-dimensional space, but all the landmass was just replaced by like a wading pool, you know, and that's sort of like how far we live off the ground. It's just like, you know, we're all just sort of in this aqueous 3-foot sludge. So if he has a representative number, his number is going to be like in the billions, because he can affect billions of people with his actions. Whereas, you know, there's going to be people that might be great people, like some taxi driver in New York that's a really nice guy and has like 3 kids and a dog, and everybody loves this guy. He can't compete on a scale with Putin, you know, from a gravity standpoint. Now, he can impact a lot of people because he's interacting with lots of people. So his impact grows in a sort of like arithmetic way, meaning like 1 at a time, 2 at a time, something like that. Whereas Putin, because of his effect, it has almost like a catastrophic geometry to it. So he can jump up and down and hurt 10,000 people at once. And then those 10,000 people tell 40,000 people, those 40,000 people, now all of a sudden it's 1 million people, right? So there's these sort of like tidal waves that form when the big guy does a cannonball into the wrong side of the pool. And that's really the best description of karmic gravity on a world event scale, to say that the waves eventually get to California, you know, regardless of whatever's happening in Washington or Sacramento or any of these other places. We will feel stuff because we're bombarded with images, messaging, psyops, you know, propaganda, all this other stuff during a time of war, even if it's not anywhere near America. It's like the Ukraine-Russia thing is not in America at all. There are Russians in America, there are Ukrainians in America, and there are plenty of people working in the State Department, and there's soldiers that maybe are, you know, like relatives of people that live here. But realistically, this is the display of karmic gravity. So Obama or Biden or George Bush or LeBron James or Tom Cruise or whatever, these people have much bigger karmic gravity because of just the nature of their job or whatever. It's not to say that there's some sort of divine thing, which is why they have a bigger presence. It's more just like a function of like the nurture of the job title and how well they do their jobs and stuff like that. And so that helps people understand it a lot better. And so what Bitcoin can do in a way is like, you think about how the nodes operate. And so we sort of all get on the same time. And so we just sort of start hopping up and down on our own individually. But if you have enough people individually hopping up and down, eventually like that wave reaches a lot of people, you know, especially if we're just that right distance, that interconnectedness across the country, across the world, then we can all get on the same page and we can deal with one truth that we can all agree on, which is, hey, that next block just came out. And it was really my understanding of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin system that allowed me to communicate this whole thesis better to people, because I came up with this when I was a kid. But it was really like, how do you reach consensus when you have so many people that are different? And it was like, okay, now we have one truth. We can disagree on fucking everything, right? Vegans, chicken maximalists, fish only pescatarians, you know, like carnivores. We can all agree on one thing. This is the block time. Like, that's it. Like, that's the only thing we have. Like, God, no God, chicken, rice, turkey, beans, red beans, black beans, white beans, spicy beans. Like, there's all sorts of disagreements over just minuscule shit that doesn't matter. But the block time is the only thing that we really have, because where you can't really debate it, because everybody can log in and see this is the block that just came out and these are the transactions. And that's it. And that's like the true north, which gives us a true north. And for a lot of people, like, let's say the church or God or whatever was that before, but those things all get polluted by people. And that's the problem, is that now we have a, I hate to say like a robot, but we sort of have a robot clock that is just going to do its thing no matter what. And that at least gives us something, like some sort of anchor, like in the movie Inception. You know, we have we can spin the top, and that's how we know life is still happening, is because the blocks are still coming out, which is like, you know, I think an awesome thing. And a lot of people like that hear this maybe that'll spark some sort of creativity in them to look at that as a positive thing, instead of saying, oh, proof of work is stupid, blah blah blah. It's like, these dumb politicians. It's like, at least we know that. At least we know the blocks are happening. Like, that's something that we can price up, price down. That's the quantum aspect of the world, is price could go down 10%, up 40%, down 40%, up 10%. Like, it's unpredictable. It's all of that at the same time. But the blocks are coming out.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple things I want to ask, but one thing pertaining to the connectivity is, so you used Putin as an example, and then, you know, celebrities, this and that. You know, these days, stuff that happens in random places like Ukraine and Russia affects California. But 2,000 years ago, what happened in Ukraine didn't affect California. Or, you know, maybe the strength of the wave was so weak that it didn't affect it until, you know, X thousand years later. Mm-hmm. What's the relationship between the gravity and the signaling mechanism or the connectivity or the medium through which the signal travels, like, you know, particularly now versus a couple thousand years ago?
Yeah. That is actually a really good question. And I think if you think about it this way, like using prior examples of people that had huge impacts on history, right? You have Julius Caesar, you have Alexander the Great, you have Euclid, you know, you have Einstein, you have a lot of these other people, Genghis Khan, you know, you have people that Abraham Lincoln, right? There's all these people throughout history that are sort of like hammering something into the ground, and then that wave is felt by other people. Sometimes it's because they build something that's amazing. Sometimes because they destroy something. Sometimes because they're really evil. Sometimes because their message outlasts them. You know, a Mother Teresa, a Gandhi, something like that. So, you know, there's these icons in history that tend to pop up at random times, seemingly random times, but in a way are responding to some sort of like, I don't know, whistle or some sort of like, you know, some sort of tune, some sort of harmony that the universe needs. They need them to hit the keys at that time. They need the Nelson Mandelas. They need the Martin Luther Kings. They need the Babe Ruths or the Charles Lindberghs or, you know, Ayrton Senna's or, you know, they need Michael Jordan or whatever. So people have a really hard time with concepts. And so they need to see examples. And now the thing is that you can see examples all the time because of our phones. Like we can pick up our phone and we can type something in, which is basically a request for information. And then you can see an example of that right away. And the speed and the connectivity, you know, and the sort of, I'll say it, the programming, if you will, that is the reason why things are amped up. And that's why things go viral now. Because viral before was literally like the plague or, you know, meningitis or, you know, Ebola or something like that. And now it's viral as like a joke, a dance, you know what I mean, or whatever. And we, as people that are stoic and seekers of truth and rational, we can figure out a way to broadcast that truth and the right people will receive it. But the downside of being, I would say, productive in society sometimes is it's almost like you never see the fruits of your labor in that regard. You start a wave and then you die. And then hundreds of years later, potentially that wave hits where it was supposed to hit initially. So this is like Copernicus. Copernicus, the sun, you know, the heliocentric solar system and all that stuff. This guy works for the Catholic Church, right? He literally works for the Catholic Church and is like, hey, this isn't right. We actually are going around the sun. The sun's not going around us. There's other planets. There's other stars. Like, there's other stuff out there. And people are like, blasphemy. And then, like, you know, take his job away, try to break him, try to make him penniless, all this stuff. He's like, guys, I'm a church scholar. Like, this is like, we need to talk about this, you know? And so his best intentions weren't even picked up in terms of, like, let's say, classical physics or whatever until Newton, which was, I think, 150 or 200 years later. So this is like what happens sometimes. You have this, like, this really amazing initial roll of the boulder down the hill. And then it has to like click and hit a couple other rocks on the way down. And then those rocks just, you know, really distribute. So in Taoism, there's a, like they start the Tao Te Ching and it's basically there. At first there was the one thing, then there was the two things, then there were the 10,000 things. And so in that sense, ideas are the same way and adoption of those ideas. You do need more than a couple people to really viralize that thing. Otherwise, you know, there's, it's like the tree falling in the woods. There's no record of it. And so because we have permanent records now, and we do have at least some sort of video proof or whatever, like a small event can kind of go big and, an event involving just two people can really travel the world and it can impact people in a very deep way.
The 10,000 things that reminds me of like a Alan Watts clip. What do they call it again? The da 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 or something. It's like the Anyway, I can't remember the exact terminology, but so that piece about like the, I guess the strength and how the signal travels. Do you think that's a net good? So I was speaking to Saylor a couple of weeks ago, and you know, he talks about how, for example, two, 300 years ago, there was an incredible symphony, and it would be played, and it was only the people who came to the to the opera or whatever it was, they would hear it. Now we can record it and we can digitize it and we can send it to a billion people. And you know, he's of the belief, obviously, and many others are, that dematerialization of the music is a net good. Now, I was having a chat with Rob Malka, and we were talking about how this this process is actually in many ways diluted the quality of these things. It's like back then you had to be some sort of aficionado and have like a real appreciation for this kind of music to go and actually listen to it and actually hear it, not just fucking listen, but like really hear it in a deep and profound way. And what we've done by dematerializing everything is we've created a paradigm of quantity over quality, and that's spilt out into everything. Like everything is these days about quantity, how many likes, how many views, how many this, how many that, and we've lost touch with quality. So anyway, I kind of challenged Saylor's viewpoint on that. I'm like, you know, is all this fucking push to dematerialization, is that actually a good thing, or are we shooting ourselves in the foot? And you know, he's still of the opinion that it is a good thing, and in, I guess, yeah, many ways it is, because we can transcend to other things. But I wonder what your thoughts are on the kind of balance between quality and quantity, and the fact that shit spreads so quickly these days that, you know, we kind of, you know, does it mess with our time preference? Does it, you know, does it create hysteria where hysteria may not have existed before? Like, what's the good and bad and ugly of this?
Right. So this is great, because this is like, this plays right into my hands as the ponderer of these things, and the critic of a lot of these things as well, like things like TikTok and stuff like that, because I do believe that addiction is the ultimate Trojan horse for weakness. And when people have this high time preference, it's almost like they're addicted to receiving something. Social media is very much about that. It's about, like you said, the likes and the engagements, but in such a fragile and worthless and low depth way that it really does dilute things, right? And so you replace, like, let's say the hearty experience with a sort of sugar-free diet soda experience, you know, push the button, get the thing, and then we just become the rat pushing for little sugar cubes or stevia cubes or whatever. One of the things that I write about, that I try to relate to people, and it's very hard because it's, you know, it's a lot of times it's just me having this conversation, like some sort of a tweet storm or something, but almost anything new. And what I mean by that is like anything that you can do on your cell phone, a lot of times it's not connecting you to anything of depth, right? Realistically. So the things that connect you on like a spiritual level, I have this term that I came up with called spiritual metabolism. It's sort of like, what are you taking? What are you ingesting? How are you digesting it? And what are you putting out as a result, right? So if you're like consuming a lot of shitty content, a lot of TikTok dances, a lot of like, let's call it like addictive, like short-term stuff, you're really diluting yourself, and you're like, you're adding a lot of noise. And then in a way, you're not even able to broadcast quality signal, because you're sort of like, you're in the fuzz and the fog of all this, you know, temporary bullshit that doesn't matter. And that's where like the quest for value and things of value. And it's like Safe talks about the sort of the fiat versus the hard money kind of world, and how, you know, the Wright brothers were like bicycle mechanics, but had a great idea and just like built a plane because they had time, you know, to like on weekends, and like materials were cheap and stuff like that. So there's a lot of really good thinkers in the space, but I think the thing that a lot of people fail to connect to is to explain exactly how diluted our purpose in life has become as a result of consuming a lot of worthless content. And so in that sense, because content is so distributable, it doesn't really have to be lasting and valuable. It just has to hit and just has to come out, just has to be pooped out. It just has to be barfed out, and then it'll get consumed because there's just so many people dying for that little bit because they're addicted. And that addiction cycle is the worst part about social media. But the people that are, I mean, it's the information age. So we don't really have a choice. This is how we have to distribute content as well. We just have to link up with quality people to then relay the exact signal, you know, and that's the, so then you get on like a harmony with the people transmitting the good shit. And then that can be louder, you know, as a result of that. That's sort of the way the radio signals work. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think Saylor's right about that. I don't think the ease of distribution improves the quality of life.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, like, you know, people listening, I mean, actually people listening are probably going to agree with us, but other people who don't generally listen might be saying, yeah, but what about the poor people who didn't get the opportunity to listen to that before? And, you know, I get the, you know, the marginal benefit of providing that. And, you know, maybe this is where, there is the marginal benefit, but simultaneously maybe the cost is that they don't figure out the symphony for themselves, you know, or it isn't a creative enterprise for them. And maybe there's so many of these wavelengths floating around that nobody knows what the fuck is actually going on. As you said, like the majority of information floating around is it's actually noise. Like that is one thing that I'm certain of in the world today is that we are inundated with noise, not with signal. I'm going to paraphrase you here, but you're suggesting that the solution to that is people in sync, transmitting signal, as opposed to noise, to kind of cut through and be louder than the noise. Is that sort of your proposal for how to deal with the excessive amount of content in the information age?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's up to us to relay properly and turn up the volume when we know that someone is polished enough, you know. And I think the hardest thing that we do is promote other people's good ideas in a totally unselfish way, right? We promote our agenda a lot of times, and everybody's guilty of this, right? We retweet something that fits our sort of, you know, agenda or whatever, not necessarily what's true, but just what makes us feel right. And those are two different things sometimes. And I think it's like important that the good is the enemy of the great in this case. It's like there are greats and then there are good ideas and then there are good intentions and then there's bad intentions, but good intentions don't necessarily mean anything, right? Because there's no action involved. So we have to really, like, that's why the writing thing is so important. Because once you write something, whether that's a tweet or a blog or a book, it's permanent. It's part of the permanent record. It's a conversation that you're having with your descendants in the future, because somebody from the future will read that you don't even know right now, and you will make a positive impact on them if it's true and it's motivating and it's stoic and it's like it's rational and all these other things. And I think that's where we need to kind of pull back. And one of the things that you've written about this, and it's a harsh reality, that not everybody wins. Despite giving, a lot of people have opportunities, but not everybody wins. Not everybody gets the gold medal. Not everybody gets the hot wife. Not everybody gets the baller job or the big exit or whatever else we define as success. It's possible for everybody to reach enlightenment, and it's possible for everybody to be a good person, and it's possible for everybody to make the world a better place. But there will always be like in a sort of man-on-man competition, there's always going to be somebody that loses. And that's the nature of finite resources. And that's what we're dealing with. And the problem that we have in society is so many people are trying to like invent their own shitcoin to raise themselves up to be a winner right? Because they're going after a very narrow definition of what it means to be a winner, or successful, or whatever. And they're compromising their ethics and all this other stuff. And what happens is that they're building a very, very narrow ladder to the top of whatever building they think it is. And the wind blows a little bit, and then bam, they crash down, and then it's like scattered. And so there's a lot of wasted energy in the sense of amplifying, you know, noise effectively. And we need to build sturdy structures and think long time preference. And that's the key to this, is if we build something that can't be torn down, you know, we need to effectively, the people that are right about things, the people that are true, and the people that are honest, and the people that are, like, you know, really smart and getting things right. And in a way, I don't want to say that's like egotistical or anything like that, but there's just other people. There's just some people that are just smarter than other people, and they're doing the right thing with their intelligence. There's a reason why Mount Rushmore has the people it has on it, right? And not some other people like Alex Mashinsky or Mark Zuckerberg or any of these other guys that are sort of like seen as either charlatans, scammers, creeps, whatever. There's no Mount Rushmore of creeps that's going to last forever, you know? Like, but George Washington was a founding father, and he will always be a founding father because what he did was important in that time. And now America, as a result of that, is always shaped by that thing. And that's what we lack right now, is we lack people worthy of a Mount Rushmore, whatever. And I get, granted, there's like a whole thing about like, oh, native lands and all that stuff. So I know that's kind of a landmine that I'm stepping on. But just using that example, right? We have to be willing to work on things that won't be complete until we're way dead. You know, like the pyramids, the Great Wall of China, like these things, like, lots of people bled into those rocks. You know what I mean? And those are great things that have lasted for thousands of years in some cases, because they were worthy of those attempts, right? And we're not doing anything right now as a species that's really that valuable that it's worth lasting for 2,000 more years or something like that, which is really sad, because we're basically just getting, as humans go and we experience higher quality of life, air conditioning, fast cars, travel, sushi, like all these things that are cool, we're also getting shorter and shorter time preferences because we think we can just hit the button and get, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, get sugar. And that's the problem. Like, that's the crystallization of the actual problem. And that's where hopefully me putting out the karmic gravity thesis in a crystallized manner can get people on the same page a little bit and say, oh, wow, I can actually make a difference. I might not feel it, but if I get everybody linked, if we get enough truth seekers and truth tellers out there, then we will make a huge difference. It's just, it might take a while because we're just little people, you know, in the scheme of things, unless we get elected president or, you know, vice chancellor of whatever Klaus Schwab is pitching these days. That's a lot to unpack, I know, but yeah, you know, I don't know if I went in there.
man, you, as soon as you mentioned Klaus's name, my three good ideas of threads I wanted to pull on just like evaporated from my brain.
I'll back up. So we need to build things outlast us. We need to build things that are going to outlast us, like Bitcoin outlasted Satoshi.
Yeah. So we'll, I mean, two things come to mind. Number one is, I think Bitcoin probably is that thing. It is that echo of, I wrote about this a couple of years ago saying that, like, the American dream lives on with Bitcoin. And I say that as a non-American. But I think, you know, the original genesis of that idea fundamentally lives on with Bitcoin, you know, or the West lives on with Bitcoin, or, you know, whatever framing you want to give it. So that's one thing. The thing about building stuff beyond our own lifetimes, I mean, before Nick Carter went AWOL, he wrote a beautiful piece about this. And, you know, it's well worth a read, as much as, you know, I don't agree with his recent behavior. Some of his writing is fucking fantastic. So, there was a good piece where he specifically talks about how we used to build cathedrals and stuff like that. And it reminds me of that. And it's actually interesting. It reminds me also of, I wonder what's different between now and so. Now in like the time of Constantinople in like the early 1000s and 1100 AD, it's like that period of time. So, you know, people say Rome fell in the 500s, but it really didn't. Rome kind of like the center of Rome shifted to Constantinople. That, like, it was the Byzantine Empire, and that was kind of the extension. And yes, it may not have had Romans there, you know, it was kind of like the Macedonians took over for a while, and there was, you know, the kind of the first Byzantine Renaissance was kind of 900 to 1100. And that was with the Macedonian emperor at the time, Basil, primarily. And it's just interesting to, I'm going through a whole history sort of deep dive at the moment, and listening to things back then, they went through the same, like that was the center of civilization back then, and the center of kind of like all economic trade and power, like everything from the east, the west, the north, the south, everything kind of like the focal point was Constantinople, and in many ways even early maps tried to place it at the center, right? Until the Crusaders kind of like tried to push that towards Jerusalem. And there was this like big clash between the East and the West versions of Christianity. But anyway, what I'm kind of getting at is back then, they, I think it was Emperor Manuel or something like that, who was after Alexis the First. He was kind of like the grandson, I think, of Alexis the First. He overextended himself and went and fought a series of battles with the Turks. He started having there was animosity there with the Western Christians and the Pope, and all this sort of shit happened. And he had some bad luck. He had a whole fleet fucking sink on the way back from Egypt. And basically, Byzantium and the Byzantine Empire and Constantinople went basically bankrupt. And what did they do to solve it? They started debasing the money, and they basically kind of put their own nails in their own coffin, and that was sort of like the fall. And then obviously the Muslims took over, and Constantinople has kind of become Istanbul. But I did a tweet about it today. I said, you know, the greatest empire back then did the exact same fucking thing that, you know, the Romans did earlier, before Western Rome kind of fell to the Visigoths and everything. And what is different though about then and now? It's like, you know, because obviously America's doing the same fucking shit now. What's different, what's interesting, is that they were still building cathedrals and monuments and stuff like that, which did go beyond the current lifespan. So what in your mind is, do you think is different about the spirit or ethic or mentality or how people showed up then versus the way, you know, these institutions and people with heavy gravity or, you know, large gravity showing up now? Because, you know, we have no Hagia Sophia now. Now we have fucking stupid, you know, like we don't have any monuments. We got nothing. So what's the difference?
Well, the biggest issue in the information age is people tend to promote themselves instead of an ideal. Okay. And when you're a part of an ideal, you're rowing a boat that's bigger than you. You're not rowing a solo canoe. You're one paddle in a boat that's 30 other paddles, right? You're rowing a big thing upriver. And it's because the people can get behind those ideals. The problem now is people are so empowered to try to like slice their individuality into like this tiny little, like, you know, it's like when you talk about music genres, it's like, oh, he's a post-pop, post-hardcore, like whatever. And it's like, what the fuck does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, what does it do? I don't even know what that sounds like, right? And it's like, oh, they sound like Story of the Year. And you're like, oh, okay, got it. Back then, they were building monuments because they had a belief system, you know? They were building cathedrals because they believed in God and they want to give glory to God. They built the Great Wall of China because they wanted to keep the invaders out, because protecting China was important. You know what I mean? The Vikings sailed across the Atlantic because they believed that there was something out there for them. There was Greenland, there was Nova Scotia, there was something, right? There was something for them to discover, whales or, you know, narwhals or gold or, you know, Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, something. So if you believe in something bigger than you, you're going to be motivated to do more stuff. You're going to be motivated to do bigger things. And when you feel like, in a way, like the Star Wars sense, like the Force works through you and you can use the Force and all that other stuff, this is kind of back to the karmic gravity fabric. Like, you believe something because you can actually feel it. And there's like different, like kind of like enlightenment. You imagine something, but you're broadcasting something while you're imagining it. So the way I explain it is, you are a receiver and a transmitter at the same time. You're an antenna, right? So if you think higher things all the time, think I need to do the right thing or whatever, you're going to be in the right mindset to do those things. Okay. Just like sports, you have to be in the zone or something like that. But when you're constantly looking in the mirror, you're constantly vain and you're constantly trying to like, you know, pose for the camera and get likes and all that other temporary shit, it really like draws your potential down. And so instead of this really tall antenna broadcasting across the world, long wave, hey, let's do this amazing thing. You're like, yeah, but check it out. I got this new vein in my bicep and it's really cool. And like, hey, check out my car, my watch, like whatever. Like, this is how cool I am. Like me, be attracted to me, you know, and you're drawing people to you in like on a very like bugs in the grass kind of way, as opposed to building a huge thing. And I think that's really because when you're building a huge thing, you can like everybody looks north. And I have this diagram that I drew where basically you imagine like truth as the highest principle. Okay. The highest first principle is truth. So it doesn't matter where you are on the earth. If you just keep going north, eventually you get to the North Pole. Right. And truth is kind of like that. As long as you're always like telling the truth and doing the right thing in that regard, then you're always going to get to that high level. You know, it doesn't matter if you start in the Sudan or you start in, you know, Shenzhen or you start in Sao Paulo, or it literally doesn't matter. You, if you go north, the top of the world is the northest north you can get, and that's the North Pole. In the same way, there's like very few truths that actually stay true all the way up to the top. But back then, people believed in these truths, and they might have believed in more things, and they might have believed harder in those things, and they might not have wanted to hear people. You know, they might have blocked out more people that told them that those things weren't true or whatever. They might have been more superstitious or something like that. If you want to degrade them, you can call them superstitious. But at the end of the day, the belief is what pushed them through the pain of carrying the boulders. The belief is what pushed them through the pain of the late nights designing something that was never going to fall down. And that's what it is. People now, they don't believe in anything. They fall for everything. There's tons of people that have evolved as a society to just feed on those people, just to feed them bullshit and then eat them alive. And that's a whole culture. That's an entire hustle culture, whatever you want to call it. That's people hyping things up, you know, standing in line to get three pairs of Jordans when the store opens so they can flip it on StockX or eBay for an extra $200, because that's their hustle. That's the way they make their money. And that's like absolute bullshit to live that type of life. And the hardest thing about being a car dealer, literally, is that's kind of what I do. I literally try to have special things and sell to special people. And it's in its own way is sort of antithetic to this thing. All you can say is, oh, hey, the quality of this thing is higher than the quality of that thing on an objective basis. But that's the problem, is people are, they're willing to engage in that sort of hype economy. It's like, it traps you. It's a cyclical, you know, rat race trap. And there's probably 3 to 7 billion people on the earth that are trapped in that dynamic right now, you know, and that's sad.
Do you think we get back to the age of, I guess, nobility? Because that's one thing that was different back then, at least from what I can tell, is whether it was the Vikings, whether it was the Romans, whether it was the Byzantines, whether it was the samurai in Japan, there was this this reverence for, you know, Bushido or chivalry or honor or duty or something like that to something higher. Do you think we circle back to that kind of nobility?
I would love for us to circle back to nobility. I think that would be a huge solution for society. The problem is that the act of acknowledging nobility acknowledges that there's sort of a caste system of our own making, where we sort of can degrade ourselves with decisions and then sort of not get to the top. And I explained this to people in using math in terms of like saying, you know, you can say that every decision is sort of a fork in the road, and you can either stay right or stay left, and then eventually reach new forks. And after like 6 or 7, you know, I would say forks in the road that happen in our lives, we end up in a completely different place versus where we could have ended up. And the people that are the smartest and that are the most successful and the best people tend to look as far ahead as possible and think of and just have the same destination in mind the whole way. And then they sort of weave through, or they stay true to their actual compass of truth, and they don't get derailed. And the problem is that a lot of people, they say, oh, I deserve what that guy has. And it's like, well, did you do the things that that guy did to deserve those things? Because if you just want it because he has it, then that's actually nothing. There's nothing there. But the problem is that the messaging in society is basically anything that you want, you can get because other people have it. So you just have to like figure out a way to take it from them or copy them or something like that. And that's not the age of nobility. And that's the information age has degraded nobility because it's basically turned noble people into targets. And that's the saddest thing that happens in society today is noble people are targeted nonstop. I mean, like the ex-prime minister of Japan was literally just assassinated, and he was widely regarded as one of the most noble people, you know what I mean, from a country that people still regard as very noble in Japan. And, you know, that's literally, he was targeted, guy made a homemade gun, shot him. It's all on video, and it's tragic and it's terrible and it's sad. And you know, people are decreasingly like good, smart, like well-meaning people are increasingly shying away from spotlight, shying away from responsibility because they don't want to be targeted. And so it's almost like in a way where they're wimping out because they're worried, you know, and we need to just say, fuck it and just go for it anyways and stay noble and do noble things so that we can build something of value that lasts. Otherwise that fear and that wimpiness is just going to dissolve everything. And we'll just be all a bunch of, you know, it'll be like, we'll all be overweight slobs in 100 years.
Yeah. Wally, basically.
Wally.
I mean, this is what you described there is why I'm a anti democracy person. I think democracy has been one of the largest or the greatest poisons to civilization is that it degraded the nobleman and it inflated the peasant basically. And you know, I trigger a lot of people with my comments around democracy and stuff like that, but I mean, it basically amplified average basically, or it amplified like a you know, what I kind of call the tyranny of the lowest common denominator, right? It's like, you know, democracy is designed, all of these collectivist systems are designed to cater for the lowest common denominator, and they all end up succumbing to that same type of entropy, is that they all devolve into stupidity basically, because, you know, there's this necessity to cater for the least competent, you know, the least energetic, the least beautiful, the least capable, the least able, and all this sort of stuff. And you end up babying society. And we were talking about this last night. There was a meetup in Austin. I was there with Parker, Jimmy, and Katie. And I kind of brought up this idea, and it's like, what's happening to society is that it's becoming infantilized. You know, and you know you're an adult when nobody else can make the decision for you. And what seems to be happening in society is that adults are being turned back into adolescents and then back into infants because all of our agency is being stripped. And I don't say that in a conspiratorial sense. Like, obviously, a large part of it is some sort of conspiratorial push to transform humans into subhuman lemmings because they're much easier to, you know, push around and control, etc. But simultaneously, it's kind of like an emergent phenomenon that kind of stems from a society in which, as you said, we're not valuing things that are higher than ourselves. We no longer have a Bushido. Like, this is why I want to write the book, The Bushido of Bitcoin, is like, you know, there was these codes of honor back in the day. There was like, you know, respect, honor, duty, morality, compassion, fucking like these sort of virtues that we aspired to live by, or at least the nobility class aspired to live by, right?
Yes.
And we've stripped all that away. Like, you know, we've burnt down the aristocracy, we've burnt down the nobility, we've burnt down the monarchies, we've burnt down all of that, and we've replaced it with a set of parasites and bureaucrats who make the laws. And we've transformed the rest of society into a swarm of lemmings who aspire to be average. And I'm like, what the fucking fuck is going on? Like, it's no wonder we have no no more monuments. We have fucking
nobody to build monuments to, right? Because correct, nobody's yeah. really worthy of building a monument to. And that's happened very quickly, right? If you think about this, it was literally like the 1900s, the last couple or the first couple presidents in America of the early 1900s. You think about somebody like Teddy Roosevelt, who literally like rode horses into battle. That's the most gangster shit that any president's ever done since like George Washington, right? This guy was actually like he was a soldier on a horse, you know, and he took that personality, that sort of cowboy way, into the White House, and that's why he was a lovable guy and people liked him for that. But the thing is, and this is the crystallized term for you that you can use. This is open source and giving it away freely, because I had to take a critical look at your approach to explaining your democracy thing or anti-democracy thing, because it triggered me when I read it. And I was like, okay, here's a guy that hasn't had to interact with these heads of state or whatever. And maybe he's got taking this, like, it's like a contrarian take, just to have a contrarian take. I read a lot of your stuff that you said about it. I've listened to a lot of your stuff. I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right. I think, you know, you've changed my mind on this. And the issue about it is that in our current system, democracy caters to the most programmable people. That's it. And the problem is that so many people are so easy to program that they fall for everything. And that's why this two-party system we have in America and the systems they have in other places, like you said, the lowest common denominator makes the biggest difference. And that is a very slippery slope from an ethical and sociological standpoint. And that's why a lot of times people say, hey, society sucks. These people suck. This state sucks. It's because they're socially promoting these people in a way through nepotism, unlike the old linear nepotism that you would get from, let's say, a monarchy or something like that. Now it's a sort of, it's a nepotism of values, or a nepotism of I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, of platform, you know, like the Democrat platform in America is like a thing. And if you fall in that cone, then you're safe and you can get elected and you can rise to power within that sort of power structure. But people are abandoning rational logic to just stay in line with the upper and lower bounds of what that program espouses. So you have these, and people are starting to rise up against this, though. You got the Dutch farmers. Now you got Italian farmers. They're protesting in mass. They're literally taking their tractors and dumping shit on municipal buildings. And I think this is what we need. This is pure signal. And this is going to wake people up. And that's what we need, because we do need people to have, like, there's a movie called Airplane, which is a fantastic movie. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's from the 70s. And there's a scene where this chick is freaking out on the plane because there's turbulence. And she's like, oh, we're all going to die, whatever. And people start lining up to, like, smack sense into her, literally. And you could never film this today. And so they have this thing where the nun goes back there and she's like, okay, listen, I can handle this. And she puts her hand on her shoulder. She's like, get a hold of yourself. And she's shaking her. She slaps her, you know, and then somebody else is like, no, listen, sister, out of the way. And the guy's like slapping her. And he's like, get a hold of yourself, you know.
Wasn't we have this like Les Nielsen or something?
Leslie Nielsen, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's it, yeah. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, it's hilarious. So anyways, it's a Mel Brooks movie. But the idea that I'm saying with this is there's so few people that are willing to smack sense into their relatives, smack sense into their coworkers, smack sense into anybody. And so we have this like really lowest common denominator, like I call it re-emotions, like people freaking out like Karens. So we have this remotional problem in society right now where people think their feelings are so valuable and they're so unwilling to have to like deal with the friction of reality. You know, they're like, oh, but I have feelings, like you can't do this to me. It's like, yo, like nobody cares about your feelings. Like you shouldn't even care about your own feelings. You know, I'm sore, whatever, keep going. Like I'm sad, keep going. Like this guy's mean to me, keep going, just do your thing. And only strong stoic people are able to do that, which is why there will be a re-rise of nobility and maybe the methods of nobility. You have podcasters like Andy Frisella and some of these other guys that are like espousing this, like, hey, live a hard, do hard workouts, do this stuff, you know, dunk yourself in water, like the Wim Hof thing. It's like, it'll make you harder and stronger. And like toxic masculinity got us where we're at. It got us fire. It got us buildings. It got us borders. It got us, you know, like all these things. It's a real thing. Like you need to be a macho man if you want to survive. And so seeing people like Jordan Peterson, get promoted and, you know, broadly in this sort of podcast space or whatever, calling shit out and say, hey, psychologically, there's a lot of people that have been falling for crap and we need to stop that. We need to say, this is your responsibility. Be a man, stand up, you know, that stuff. And, but you're right. Democracy sucks. It sucked for a long time. And it sucks because people have been using their phones as a weapon or the phones of the idiots. And there's like this, there's this thing like, I forget what was for. It might've been for like FTX. It was a commercial and it's got Larry David in it. And they're like rewriting the Constitution. And he's like, wait, everybody gets a vote? Even the dumb people, you know? And that's the problem is there's a lot of people that don't put in the work. A lot of people don't put in the work and they still get a vote. And it's like, that's the populist problem that we have right now. And we have to figure out a way to either get the base level of education and awareness higher, which is possible, but could take some time. Because it's really only been, I would say, like maybe three or four generations between where we were really like in charge of this stuff and then like now where we are. And it's been, we've definitely gone downhill, but it's happened very quickly, maybe 50 or 60 years. I think, which means that it's a quick cycle. We could probably get it back in 15 years if we actually work hard enough at it. You know, you just need to have people, you need to have people like yourself. You just need to suck it up and just run for office. That's just, you're just gonna have to do it. Pick some random town. You and Marshall Long can run for office. You and Parker and Jimmy, you guys just pick different cities, divide and conquer, take over Texas, and then you'll attract people in, and Texas will be the Constantinople of America, and it'll be great.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
It's possible. It's possible. Don't rule it out, bro. We gotta take the pain ourselves. We have to be willing to do the work. Otherwise we're just complainers like everybody else.
Yes. One must bear the responsibility at some point. I just wonder what that method is going to look like. All right. I want to trigger some people, but let me just do something first quickly.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read them each week and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating plague that is consuming our world.